Welcome, everybody. It's really great to see you all here. This process of planning is, it needs us all, so it's really great to see you. For those who don't know, my name is Tina Carlson. I'm the chairman of the, or current chair of this planning commission, our Boulder County Planning Commission, and I'm very pleased to be working with Colton Thompson as our as our vice chair, and Elena Hughes and John Grant and Shelly Pierce Gibson, which is right there, and also our alternate planning commission, Nancy Tossel. Thank you all for being here and engaging in our community planning. The best community planning starts with bringing people together, and we are all here this evening because we know change is inevitable. Property continues to change hands and is divided. Land uses change as the community changes. Community planning is a process that helps the community change in a sustainable way that supports the quality of life here as well as the economy that works here in Boulder. Your input is invaluable. This meeting is an update that was started in November 17th, 2022 about community attainable housing, how we can support that. The collection of ideas we are presenting tonight comes from the three housing groups with the help of our town planner, Lee Ellis. Tonight we will collect your opinions, your thoughts about these options that we have presenting here. And the main part of this meeting is to get your input. So please stay around, and we'll have a commissioner at each one of these, and you'll be able to talk to us and give us feedback on what you think about those different ideas that we can do. Nancy Tosta will be our facilitator tonight, and thank you so much, Nancy.
Told you have to wait for the microphone. So I'm Nancy Tosta. I've been volunteered to facilitate the meeting, with my primary responsibility being trying to keep things on time and helping you all provide your input. As Tina said, the goal tonight is to review the reports of the working groups that came out of the November 17th meeting. There were three working groups, so you're going to hear the work that each of those groups did, just to give you an overview. And then to describe five of the options that the Planning Commission has been noodling on, thinking about over the last couple of months since that November forum, and then have you all provide some input, ideas, concerns, observation about those five options, which is what the papers on the board around the room are for. So this meeting, after we give you a little bit of an overview on the committee reports and the five options, we want you to wander around the room. You'll see pencils, pens, and notes, pads on the tables for you to write your thoughts on. And these can be your ideas, your concerns, anything that you think might be relevant to these five options that potentially relate to changes in ordinances that the Planning Commission would recommend to the Town Council. So this is the continuation of what happened in November, and it's not the end. We're gathering input. Some of this will be compiled after this meeting, put back out to you for digestion and comment, and then hopefully the Planning Commission can move forward in developing some suggested changes in how we'd like it to be. Jessica, could you put the PowerPoint up there? We've made it a point to put the Boulder vision. Oh, it's over there. Okay, so this is the Boulder vision. And if you go to the second slide there, Jessica, we wanted to remind you that this is the vision that's in the general plan. And from this, this sort of guides what the intent would be of making ordinance changes. So this is guiding the way the Planning Commission is thinking about all of this and will continue to guide the development of ordinances. So the agenda is, we'll hear the committee reports, we'll hear a quick overview of each of these five options, and then we've left about 45 minutes for you all to put your thoughts down. You can talk, there will be a planning commissioner in front of each of these flip charts. We aren't here really to answer questions. We're here more to guide you to say, well, that's a good question, Jennifer. Write it on a piece of paper, stick it up on the flip chart, because it's something that we didn't consider. So are there any questions on what we're trying to do here? Okay. If not, then I am going to go directly into the committee reports. So, Tina, you are up first. Tina Carlson and Colleen did the community vision work group, and they're going to report on this. I should have said all of these reports are online, and so you can take a look at them. There are some other documents online that Peg has put up, and this is on the this meeting agenda. There's some background documents. There is one article from High Country News on the challenges that gateway communities such as Boulder has become as a tourist destination are facing in terms of attainable housing. They're unique challenges, and it's a very interesting article. There's a whole report that goes along with it, which hopefully Peggy can put that one up too. But it's great background material, so I encourage you to take a look at it.
Thanks, Nancy. I had the privilege to work with the Community Vision Group, and we met in January 18 in 2022. And I had a great group of people, but you know, we can't all get together at the same time that signed up. But the people who did come were Jay Bale, Paige Collette, Josh Ellis, Judith and Bill Guile, Elizabeth Julian, Stephanie Love, Mark Nelson, and Nancy Costa. Was Jen there too? Did I miss that? I can't remember. Sorry. Anyway, it was a great group, and we only met once, but and we were planning on meeting again, but things just didn't happen to do this. But the first thing that we started out was with a vision statement in our plan. And talked about, you know, the first thing is this quality of life that we feel we have in Boulder. And the second objective does include supporting the economically viable future, encouraging local land-based economy centered in food security, cottage industry, local entrepreneurs, full-time residents, and attainable opportunities for future generations. So attainable housing is obviously in our general plan. How we get there, the first thing that really came up was, how much do we need? In how much development do we need now? And you know, so the idea was, well, we'll wait until Elena's group gets their survey to really identify that. But slow development so that we're not pushing development past what we actually need going forward, and we're doing it more incrementally. There was some concerns about the big developers, which we've all talked about in the past, and how in Southern Utah there's a lot of change in from agricultural to subdivision, and the short-term rental issue, which we have tried to deal with our ADUs, not allowing or allowing a percentage of the housing in the different districts to have actual short-term rentals. But the goal too is to allow more affordable or rentals in town, and that hasn't worked very well, but we're we'll have to think about that further. Building is very expensive here in town, so that. The unoccupied houses was brought up as something we really needed to look into. Let's see, working with the employers to and incentivizing some housing for employees when developing businesses here in town. Finding out what is our limitation with water and septic, that is a big project that the Planning Commission has talked about too, but we'll need some money to figure out how to get that information more clearly defined. Limiting the size of the subdivision development is what I was talking about before. Making our cluster development more feasible for the landowners to actually, and for it to change from the 5-acre lots, which cluster development is only 2.5-acre lot minimum right now. And then multiple living spaces also we talked about having, you know, duplexes or fourplexes or whatever. But in the meeting that we had in November, there was talk about the school and how the employees at the school were struggling quite a bit. And so that was a project that this particular group really wanted to say, yes, let's go forward. Let's make this happen. So that is in the process as right now. So that's my
thing. Thank you. Thanks, Lena. Elena is something needs.
Yep. All right, so we mostly did a survey went out to the housing needs group that was formed at the forum in November, as well as on Pegboard. We got 38 responses, which was really great. So I'll go through kind of the overall results of that with you guys. So it was mostly couples. It was a little over half was couples, some individuals, and then some families of 3 to 4. Over half of the respondents have lived in Boulder for more than 5 years, and most of those have been in Boulder for more than 10 years. 82% of those respondents live in Boulder year round. The largest group of respondents was self-employed and then employed at a local business. Something that I think was surprising to us was that only 2 respondents out of the 38 were worked remotely. When asked if looking for home ownership, year round rentals or seasonal rentals, 81% respondents are looking for home ownership. 19% of respondents were looking for year-round rentals, and 0% were looking for seasonal rentals. 51% of respondents said they would be most likely to leave Boulder and pursue home ownership elsewhere if they couldn't find it in Boulder, as opposed to continuing their current rental or looking for a new one. There was a lot of variety. We asked a question about what people's current rentals are like, and that was really across the board. People are renting entire homes, people are living in staff housing, people are living in yurts, trailers, ones they own on other people's properties, ones other people own on other people's properties. So there wasn't really a big theme there, but basically all kinds of options right now for people. And we laid out some options of, if you were looking to own a home, what would you be looking for? And if you were looking to rent, what would you be looking for? So for home ownership, the most popular option was a remodeled house. For those of you that were at the housing forum in November, there was a group, NeighborWorks, Mountain Country Home Solutions, that was there that talked about potentially, they did it in Tropic or someplace else where they would buy homes and then fix them up and resell them. And that was the most popular option. Then buying raw land and building themselves, and then self-help housing, like Dave Conine presented to us about community rebuilds. There was some but less interest in apartments and townhomes. And then when given the option for rentals, the most popular option was renting an entire unit with no roommates. next was tiny homes, then yurts, then trailers, with less interest in shared spaces, regardless of what the space is. Um, 76% of respondents would be interested in considering a rent-to-own scenario, and then an additional 13% said maybe. So with each of these next few options, I gave a maybe would like more information option. And then, so then the next one was about half of respondents said they would consider buying a home with a capped appreciation value if it helped it remain more affordable. And then an additional 29% said maybe they'd like more information on what that would look like. Respondents said they would consider buying a home that's part of a community land trust. And then same thing, an additional 29% said maybe they'd like more information. Most respondents are interested in having some sort of space for garden, chickens, fruit trees. People are looking to have a little bit of land with their housing. Let's see. 58% of people said they would consider collaborative housing options, where houses are owned individually, but land, open space, and garden space is shared. And then across the last few questions were a little bit more about what people would be willing to pay for these types of things. And that was kind of across the board too. I think maybe we would need to sort of moving forward with something, maybe narrow that down a little bit more. We had all kinds of options there. One thing that feels important is that the biggest group, 30% of people, had a household income of between $20,000 and $30,000 a year, with another 15% of the respondents under $20,000 a year. And thinking about the fact that most of our respondents were couples, that's two incomes there if they're both working.
Wait, what was that number again?
30, yeah, sure. 30% of people were making between 20 and 30,000. Another 15% were making under 20,000. And then I can give you the rest if you're interested. 9% were making between 30 and 40,000. 15% were making between 40 and 50,000. 15% between 50 and 75, and then 15% over 75,000. And then, yeah, I think we need to do more research to figure out what the right pricing would be, because we didn't really have any themes there.
Great. Thank you, Elena. And John Moran is going to talk about housing availability.
Okay, so I ran what I call the Housing Providers Work Group. And this was to seek input from basically the large landowners, potential investors, people with real estate and real estate and housing experience. And I want to thank all those who participated. We mostly did this by email, but an awful lot of follow-up one-to-one conversations, which took a lot of time both for me and the people who participated. But I really want to thank them for the time they spent. We did send out a questionnaire, but I didn't get the 38 responses, so we're less quantitative. Some of the key conclusions. I think the first one is that we have a lot of civic-minded landowners here in Boulder. Nobody I talk to is in Boulder to make a fast buck. That's important. These are people who support the goals of the general plan. But I'll say the unspeakable. It's hard for them to come on and say it, but they want a reasonable return on their money, and they have a right to sell their property at market. So that's it does create some tension, given the numbers at the later. Your typical formula is around a third of your income for rent. That's or basically rent or home ownership costs, which would be mortgage, taxes, and insurance. For a couple that's working at those type of wages, $1 million house is out of reach, $500,000 house is out of reach, around a $350,000 house starts getting to be a stretch, and a 5-acre lot's going for about $250,000. That's a problem. Right now in Boulder, land and construction costs are high. They're higher than they are on the Wasatch Front. On the other hand, Garfield County has the second lowest county median income in the state. Paiute's the only one behind us. So we've got high costs and low wages, a problem. But as the reports like the Headwaters Economics show, as newspaper articles all over the country are showing, this housing crisis is universal. It's not unique to Boulder. The good thing is that a lot of other communities have already faced these problems and have done things. And there's a lot of resources we can learn from what's worked elsewhere and what's not worked elsewhere. So right now, the current town ordinances really create a lot of barriers to landowners doing things with their property that would support the goals in the general plan, be good for the land, and be good for the community. On the other hand, incentives can be used to encourage both housing, local workers, and preservation of the town's rural character and agricultural heritage. The biggest one is bonus density, higher, allowing more lots if the landowner is willing to do things that further those goals, so that the landowner is doing something for the community and we're accepting a higher housing density, which offsets the impact on their investment. The devil is always in the details. And as a good example, I point out that Moab, which did a worker housing ordinance, spent the better part of a year negotiating between the housing advocates, the landowners, the property rights people, and trying to come up with exact formulas and all the details. So you can't just pull a number out and say, oh, this is what we propose. It takes a lot of give and take and understanding the implications. But again, we can learn from what other communities have done. Things like deed restrictions, as you mentioned, things like capping on homes is important. If you're going to give an incentive for creating housing for local workers, you want to be sure it stays as housing for local workers. Tina and Elena both mentioned scale. You know, realistically, you know, this we've only got 200 some houses in Boulder. About 40% are second homes, 40-45%.
Wow.
So at scale, if we added a half a dozen housing units for local workers over the next few years, making an incredible amount of progress. We're not talking about hundreds of houses, we're not even talking dozens of houses. So that's about what I've got from the housing providers.
Well, thank you. You all stayed on time. That was great. And I wanted to say, Jessica, there's a number of people on Zoom. Is that correct?
Oh, yes.
So for those of you on Zoom, we're hoping that you can hear everything that's going on in the room. This next section, we're going to do an overview of these various options for ordinance changes. And we're going to ask folks to provide their input on Zoom. If you have thoughts, please put them in the chat, and that will be recorded and incorporated as part of the meeting, the compilation we do of this meeting. So you won't maybe get all the details and have the opportunity to have the interaction at the flip charts, but if you do have comments or observations, please put them in on Zoom. So the next section, we're going to quickly give you an overview of some of the options that the Planning Commission has been looking at in terms of ordinances. So you can go to the first slide, Jessica. And some of these, Lee Nellis, I know, is on Zoom. He has helped help the Planning Commission think through some of these. And there's obviously lots more work to be done on them. But I'm going to turn to Elena first to just talk about the first option, the subdivision rule changes, and we're going to put that's over here. So if you have comments or thoughts on this, you can wander over to this flip chart and talk to Elena about it.
Okay, so the three sub options on that are provide flexibility based on the characteristics of individual parcels. We can go into more details on that over there. Use average lot sizes and allow flexibility in lot shape, as well as allowing lower minimum lot sizes. In general, these options, kind of the benefits of these are that landowners would have more flexibility to make best use of their land. It's easier to maintain agricultural heritage and production, and there's more attainable housing possible. And the potential drawbacks are that they may be smaller lots with homes closer together.
Great, thank you. Next is John to talk about potential changes in the development, what actually happened and why.
Yeah, okay. So a couple of things here. One that has been brought up repeatedly, although it's not the most desirable housing option, allowing long-term use of RVs, especially for seasonal workers, is something very, very common in resort towns throughout the country. It's certainly an expedient way to get somebody who's now camping up in the national forest or crashing on somebody's couch into their own housing. So that's one we should consider. Another one is encouraging duplexes. Right now, ADUs are used by right. The only difference between an internal ADU, which, like I say, under state law is now a use by right, and a duplex is that on a duplex, both sides are rented. Not a big difference. You can't tell from the outside. The other one is to allow multifamily dwellings. And again, Tom Hoyt, some years ago in the previous housing workshop back in 2017, you have a very nice looking fourplex that looks like a big single family house. You know, and one of the wonderful things that the state legislature has allowed us is we can impose architectural standards in exchange for increased density. So we can't have things like triplexes and fourplexes that really are the scale and appearance of other structures here in Boulder. So those are some of the things we can do within development standards. The pros, we're creating more housing. The con, we are going to have some higher density as a result.
Great, thanks, John. Tina.
Okay. All right, the housing incentives. This is kind of a complicated thing that even the Planning Commission is struggling with a little bit, is the density and how to give bonuses for attainable housing and deed restrictions to maintain that affordability. So there's a lot to study about. Sorry.
Could you just clarify what bonuses means?
Oh, like bonuses, bonuses for the landowner. So if the landowner
is a bonus.
So if the landowner is going to provide a property to be sold or to be used as attainable housing, that landowner might be given more options, like in a cluster development, more options to have maybe so many more lots that they can actually develop to sell in that subdivision or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
So
that's correct?
Yeah. Okay.
So giving the bonuses would be like allowing them to subdivide further or in a smaller density, something like that.
Right.
But not like giving them money.
I see that. Yeah. No, it's more of a bonus for the landowner.
Yes.
Exception to some rule based on doing something that is attainable and
so
remains.
So for example, like right now it's 5 acres only.
Right.
Whereas potentially if you were to maintain affordability, maybe we could make it be you had 10 acres and you could have 3 lots. And then that way you can make a little more money off of them, even though you're selling them for less, you'd have 3 to sell instead of 2. So it makes it more worth it for the landowner to subdivide.
Well, you could sell at cost, but make them smaller lots that are more affordable individually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, and this, you know, a lot of these things connect with other things. So like, for instance, organization, NeighborWorks, they buy land to help set up housing, and then this is a whole program that they do. And so if they have a chance to buy the land and start with working with somebody on that, as far as building a house, dealing with that, over time, and so they would get money for the property. It wouldn't mean that they'd get,
market value.
Yeah.
Or whatever they decide. I mean, John said, go ahead.
Okay. Maybe I could add, as I said, the devil is the details of permits, but sorts of things that have been discussed would be As Elena said, right now with 10 acres, you can put in 2 lots. Perhaps we allow somebody to put in 4 lots if one of them is dedicated as local worker housing. So they've got 3 lots to sell market by giving up a quarter of the property for worker housing. That's the type of thing. Now, is that a good enough formula? Does it have to be a third that they give to the incentive? Do we give them more 5 lots? Those are details we work out. We need to talk first. Are we willing to do in principle bonuses for developments that advance general plan goals?
Thank you. And I got a question too with that. I know there's already been multiple subdivisions proposing things like this. Are there rules right now that will allow them to do that, or is it depending where they're zoned in town?
No, that's why we're thinking about changing them, is sort of in response to some of those things and the housing problem. But right now, none of these options that we're presenting are other than no change.
Yes, but the cluster development still leaves you the same number of lots, so it has no real incentive.
Yeah. Okay, there's one more, then I'm going to go over it. Predetermined conditions for allowing bonuses and how much. So I guess we've got over this based on. So basically, this would be making a rule that says there's, if you do this, you can do this. It's not like you have to, you know, there's any more negotiation in the rules, that there is a predetermined conditions for bonuses. But the question is how much, and that's where we're kind of moving forward, how to figure that out.
And we'll have time after we present these slides, you'll have time to go talk to planning commissioners at the various posters.
Okay,
get more information.
And the last one is about land transfer development, and you're going to have to go to my section over here for further information on this. It's more complicated, so we're not going to.
Thank you, Tina. I'm going to do the next one, which says agriculture, open space, incentives. This is a little bit different because we realize that as you think about attainable housing, you also have to think about the economy. You can't do these independent of each other, and there's a lot in our vision. We're an agricultural community, and we want to sustain that basis, and that makes us somewhat unique. So in tourist destinations. So how do we do that? Well, very similar, perhaps you have more density, similar to the bonuses that Tina was just talking about. If you're close to agriculture, if you're close to infrastructure, that if you have a 10 acre, you can develop 4 2-acre lots if you keep 8 acres in agricultural production. These are just numbers I'm throwing out here, but that's an example of what you might allow to do. And if you do commit to sustaining your land in agricultural production, then perhaps there are some bonuses. The community land trust, this is in some ways Elena alluded to this, and the options for how you own your residence, but you have land owned in common that is put to agricultural use. These are just some examples of this. The pros are that it helps sustain the agricultural economy of Boulder. And that, if Boulder loses that, then it becomes potentially just a tourist destination. So that's something to think about. The cons are, I think, as others said, you may find more dense development in some places because we've allowed that. We've encouraged it in order to preserve the agricultural options. And the last but not least is Colleen, who's going to talk about the sort of do nothing alternative.
So basically, it would be no change. And if anybody has been coming to our meetings for the last 10, 5, 8 years, basically how things are running. We do have development here and we are growing, but we would leave things as they are. There would be no changes. There, we do have a few state changes that are required by law. Here's just a few of them that we highlighted. And that's to preserve the existing 5-acre minimum lot size in LDR, low density, and GMU zoning districts. Preserve the lot shapes as they are. Do not adopt any changes in housing as far as these things that we've been talking about. Do we just leave things as they are? And rewrite subdivision regulations to comply with new state law. So we are going to go through the subdivision soon, and we're required by state laws to make some changes, but our community is pretty small. So our changes won't be like big city changes, but there'll be a few. And we will be working on subdivision ordinance this next year or so, required by law.
Great. Well, thank you. We're ahead of schedule.
Yeah, so other changes.
In that corner, we also have some flip charts that allow you to put other thoughts up here. If what we've covered in terms of the gamut of options doesn't, you don't think it's extensive enough, then please write your thoughts up there. We have a little bit of time for more questions, if any of you have specific questions for the Planning Commission as a whole. Otherwise, we can break into our groups here, and you have the option to talk one-on-one and put up your individual thoughts. So are there any questions right away?
I have a question that you read off Highway 12. If you had condensed development there, you're not going to change the character of the rest of the town. And it seemed to me that we're going to be focusing to some extent on the kinds of development along the road, because it's actually a key way of keeping the shape of the town as it is.
Walt, that's a great observation, and should be put up on the flip chart so that we can capture on other changes.
And then you kind of repeat what.
Yeah, so Walt said concentrate development on Highway 12, and if you do that, you will preclude changing a lot of other parts of Boulder where we do sustain agricultural uses.
You know, and that really is assuming going to be more businesses coming in to do things.
Right. Assuming more businesses
do something. If they come in, possibly to deal with their housing or the people who are going to be working here.
Exactly. So if there are new businesses, they could also consider employing housing associated with those businesses. So excellent thoughts. Put them up on a flip chart. Any other questions?
So when you were talking about incentives for landowners to say like you'd subdivide more if they left one parcel for community housing, if landowners were leaving one parcel for local worker housing, is it up to the landowner to maintain it as local worker housing, or is that like the landowner is giving the land over to the town and the town is maintaining local worker housing? What would the plan be there?
I think there's a couple of options and we're looking into that. So that's the best answer I can give. There's a deed thing that you can apply to that. How it is appreciated is different.
Right. So. Okay. That makes sense. There's probably details to be worked out.
Where does just a simple subdivision, like you have a 10-acre lot, someone's willing to sell you 5 of that below market value because they like you, which is pretty hard to do right now with the way the town's functioning. Is there going to be any change in current subdivision laws that makes that easier and distinguish a land divide from an actual subdivision?
All land dividing is subdividing.
A subdevelopment.
So I want to answer that. So I think Elaine is doing the subdivision, aren't you?
Yeah, the subdivision
so
changes.
Those are things that need to be asked and put down on her, on your, on that
chart. Chart. Me over there.
Yeah.
So I have questions about your sure. You were the first one, weren't you?
Yes.
Is there a way to...
Jess, could you go back to the option one?
Because I did not understand what you were presenting.
Oh, sure.
Okay. It was average lot sizes of allow flexibility in lot shape. What does that mean?
Yeah, so averaging lot sizes would be sort of gives the landowner some flexibility in what then the value would be. So, for example, if you had a 10-acre parcel, instead of doing 5 and 5, potentially you could do a 2.5-acre lot and a 7.5-acre lot. Then you could sell that 7.5-acre lot for more money and make the 2.5-acre lot available to someone who doesn't, who that's what they can afford. Because currently with the price of land in town, 5 acres is expensive for people. So it would allow like someone with more money to almost like, yeah, pay the bulk of it. And then there being a smaller option for somebody
else.
So
allow then if you were selling in that scenario with 7, the next owner to subdivide again, because now we can. If you made one subdivision, mm-hmm. that's it, no more subdivision.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the average has to be 5.
Right. So the average is still 5. So yeah, if that part wasn't clear, I'm not sure if that answers your question, but if that part wasn't clear, so the 10 acres, if the average lot size still needs to be 5. So that's why you could do 2.5 and 7.5. Because 2.5, yeah.
So the next owner who has 7 acres would do 2 and 5.
We probably wouldn't average 5.
So
no, the one that, yes.
These are all just options that you're looking at. We don't really have a lot of definitive answers. And these things are will be going into the subdivision ordinance as far as how we're going to do this. And this is what we're talking about as far as trying to work out. We can come up with hundreds of scenarios how to do these things and what is going to work for the town. And we're just trying to give you a few options, basically. We don't really know if these will all work. Same thing with no changes, you know, as far. So that's kind of what we're doing right now.
But questions like that would be really helpful to write on stickies and put them on there because they'll help us if we move forward with an option to think everything through properly.
If I can just say one. Just maybe if you even say this, this is a working meeting, right? So like everyone is going to participate. Now you'll stand up, you can go over, ask your questions, write it down. And it's not just held in this main part where you're raising your hand and asking. So at this point it's to break out, go write your questions down, talk to the person who knows a little bit about it. And then you can write down what you like. There's comments. I like this. I hate this. Whatever, so that
no,
they're input.
Yeah.
Okay, don't do that one.
Yeah.
If you have a different solution, and then that way they will take all of this information into consideration to then help make changes later on.
Yeah.
So right now this is just such a beginning stage where they're asking for your help. And so, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Elizabeth.
Can I request also when people raise their hand, can you please wait for Nancy to get to you with the mic so people on Zoom can hear?
People on Zoom. Elizabeth, did you want to say?
Yeah. I think the idea of the lower minimum lot sizes is the same as the last one on the incentive slide. And the idea is that, let's say you have 25 acres, when you divided it, you could do five acre lots, or you could do it as a different number, right? You don't have to do 5 5-acre lots, but the maximum amount is 5. And the incentive is that you can, but all of them would be deeded out. So once it's done, it couldn't answer Donna's question. If you're using the incentive of average lot sizes, the way that works is once it's done, it's done. And so it also allows that if you have an area that kind of goes back up to the territory of property, then if you want to keep a main part in it, idea of clustering or what Elena said is a larger lot and a smaller lot, but the percentage based on your actual size would never change if the minimum lot size remained at 5.
Which is the density stays.
The density stays the same. That's what average, the lower average lot size, the incentives that refer to that, they're all the same concept. And they're just saying the density remains the same.
So if you have 25 acres, you can't divide it more than five times, but the way you divide it can be changed.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Thank you.
I just wanted to step way up broad view, and that the one thing that Lee Nellis had suggested to the Planning Commission is find out what the community will is. Like, does the community support the concept of higher density in some areas? Does the community support doing some of these rather flexible and creative ways of dealing with property that we just haven't done that? We've had this 5 acre minimum thing forever. A lot of people want to keep it exactly that way. What is the political will of the town to actually have change? And getting into the nuts and bolts of the acres and numbers of density credits and all that kind of stuff is way down the line until the community decides that we even want to go that direction. So just keep that in mind. That part of the meeting is to see how much support there is for making changes, period. And then we have to figure out what those changes are.
That seems a little backwards.
Mark, I this is Paul, and again, one of the big problems we have is housing for seasonal workers who come to the city or elsewhere. And it seems to be one possibility to change lot size is to make the business responsible for their own husband, their own employees, and allow them to take some change over the lot size for creating their husband.
That's a good suggestion.
One of the problems about this whole discussion has been this idea that you sign what you want and then make the plans later, you know, and all the planning has been involved with it for over 30 years. That's counter planning. You need to have some concrete ideas. Now, this idea that Ms. Elizabeth was talking about, she made that very clear about that being an option. You listed a lot of the stuff is so vague, is it's impossible to understand. You need to hammer out some specific ideas that you can look at and say that's a good idea that can be incorporated. But this vague idea that we decide we want change without knowing what that looks like, that's backwards with their plan. And you have to say what those are, that you're pointing, you don't vote for somebody, you don't vote for something that you don't know what you're voting for. We do that all the time, but we know how that works out. So I think we need more plans like that description, like what I was talking about, employers providing housing. Some concrete things to lay out to discuss without just making a broad statement saying, well, we want change, so we vote for change.
I think, Mark, the intent is to write what Elizabeth said up there, write what Walt said up there, and then for folks to say, yeah, that's a good idea, let's pursue that. And so the next step is going to be some of those much more concrete ideas. And the hope is that out of this conversation, you all have some of those concrete ideas. It's not that the Planning Commission hasn't talked about some of those things. We've talked about pretty much all of them, but we're looking for your input and agreement to go with it. And next step, the next meeting will be, okay, here's what came out of this conversation. Here's what we're thinking we will do. It's a little bit of chicken and egg, you're right. Last question over here, because we want to get to getting your input.
Yeah, this is a question that so much is kind of food for thought. I mean, one thing that keeps coming up over the years in these conversations is this concept of open space. And I really want everyone to think critically about what that actually means, because 5 acres of tumbleweeds repeated endlessly across large sections of land qualifies as open space. However, I don't think that's what any of us have in mind when we envision open space. So I think it's important for us to all have a very clear idea of what we want to accomplish think for the most part, at least according to our general plan and most folks in town I've ever talked to, I mean, we're really interested in agriculturally productive open space, not any kind of open space. So I think it's really important for us to start drawing that distinction when we have these conversations about what we mean by open space. And if you want agriculturally productive, it's a whole different ballgame to accomplish than just being land.
Thank you. Okay, great comments, all of which I hope you're jotting the sticky notes so that you can set it up on the appropriate category here. So we're going to give you the opportunity. I'm going to suggest that you sort of push all the chairs out of the way of the flip charts so that people can get to those. Take pens, sticky notes, write out your thoughts, stick them up there, grab a cookie along the way. And just so you know, you are going to be given three dots at the end of this exercise. And we're going to ask you, so as you go around and see the ideas, we're going to ask you to put a dot three times on ideas that you really like. If there's something that you think is incredible, put all three dots on. But you'll have three votes to basically help us think about prioritizing some of the actions that the Planning Commission has to take. Okay. So grab a pen. We do ask you to return the pen to the can, but grab a pen. And we will reconvene you in about 45 minutes. So I want to tell you what's going to happen. Every note that you put on the flip chart, we're going to capture these. We're going to put them in a report, and we're going to use that document to help lay out the agenda for the Planning Commission. It may mean there's too many ideas here, and we need you all to come back together and help us refine them. Planning, as I said to someone, the Planning Commission only meets once a month, and so trying to work through all of this may be a challenge, but the intent is to capture everything that's here, put it into a document that you can all review, comment on, and hopefully add more value to. We really appreciate all of these ideas, and I am going to turn this over to Tina to close out the meeting.
Okay, thank you. Nancy, you did a great job. Thank you so much. I just want to give a chance to everybody to know that planning is something you have, community planning, you have to spend time learning about. And this is, you know, kind of an option. I feel this is kind of an option for you to ask where you understand some of these things. And the other thing is, I really encourage you to either Zoom in, or the first hour is usually with Lee Nellis, our planner, and he has some great ideas, and he would be enlightening, I think, for people who are interested in this. We will be reaching back out to you guys for sure to get some more input. But our meetings are recorded, so you can be in the garden and put the headsets in and listen to them if you want to. The information for each meeting, we usually have quite a bit of information about what we're covering at those meetings. And if you're interested, you can get a lot more information about how we're working and moving forward. It's overwhelming. But I really appreciate everybody being here. There's no way we can really have a good community plan moving forward without people coming and joining us in this. We're only.
And can six. I add that we appreciate the volunteer planning commission.
We appreciate you. All right. Anything else?
Anyone who wants to stay and help fold up chairs and tables would be more than welcome. Again, thanks for your participation.
Thank you.